So I want to say we met about a year and a half, 2 years ago. Is that about right?
When we did the first one of these,
yeah,
that was January 2020.
Was it?
So we met at one of the showcases at the brewery.
Yeah.
Before that, so yeah, it would have actually, because I had my son.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was only about 2 months old.
Mm.
Yeah, I'd say December 2019.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And then we did, we obviously mucked around together for a bit and did a few bits. And then this podcast came out and we called it Authenticity because it was about, mm-hmm, you know, discovering kind of your authentic self and the journey that, yeah, you went on at the time through your mental health. And would definitely encourage any listeners to go back and explore that one. That's our most listened to podcast, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
That was a massive night for me, that was.
Mm.
Because, like, that was the first time that I kind of spoke about what I'd gone through.
Yeah.
To people that I didn't really know.
Ah,
if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
As more as someone who'd come through it instead of being someone who was going through it.
Yeah.
Although, yeah, I was, looking back, I still was.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
Oh?
Yeah.
Sorry.
No,
I've kicked the bucket. Sorry, I've gone. I've just kicked the bucket. The bin.
And, like, I suppose the idea behind doing this podcast again together is, like, what's the story since then? Because you spoke initially about, you know, the journey that you were about to undertake with making a record, and writing and to raise money for mental health. And I suppose that was almost part of that, the initial part of that journey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That you were at the time. And I think I just thought it'd be cool to catch up to sort of explore where that's led you, really.
When you asked about doing it, I was just like, yeah, Carl, that sounds cool. But actually here now, and when you say what's happened between then, there's a hell of a lot happened. I don't just, yeah, mean personally, but like,
In the world in general.
It's massive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like, when you actually sit and think about it, it's unbelievable in that short time.
Yeah. Disease.
Yeah. Poverty.
Yeah. Or all of the horsemen of the apocalypse.
Literally everything, yeah. And me and Chris are the only ones standing. That's it now. Yeah.
So the journey into creating the record, because I think you already had the songs written.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the songs already existed, and it was about you finding the producer, finding the musicians, and then working together to create this record that would help raise money for mental health. And yeah, I don't think at the time you'd partnered with anybody.
No.
It was very much this is the intention that I'm setting.
Yeah.
And you've pretty much done all of them, haven't you?
I suppose, yeah, actually. Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm smiling now because I hadn't done anything then. But it was just all,
yeah,
an idea. It,
yeah,
was, and I was determined to do it. But I didn't know how I was going to do it. Mm. But that was the plan. I just wanted to, because the songs were wrote as I was getting better from my own illness.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to use them to help others in some way, and recording them and kind of just donating the profits, but along the way telling my story,
mm,
and what we were doing, I just thought it was the best way I could help other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we say we've done most of it. I've still not finished the record.
No.
It's close.
Yeah.
But
the thing is with records, though, for anyone listening who's never been involved in making a record, you always say, oh, yeah, I'll do that this year. And then 3 years later,
yeah,
you are still making the record. It's just, it's, yeah, kind of inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, everything with creating music, for me, I don't know how it's for you, but it always seems to take longer than you think it's going to take.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it will be coming out this summer.
Yeah.
And we are close to finishing it.
Mm.
But I kind of thought initially, when we first spoke, actually, it was like a 2 year plan, so the record should have come out, if that was 2020,
mm,
it probably should have come out like mid 2021.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's going to come out mid 2022.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we didn't know what was.
Yes, what, yes, was something
come.
Happened.
Yeah. So, I mean, the world changed.
Yeah.
we'll probably go off on so many tangents during this, but just concentrating slightly on COVID and that. When it first kicked off, from a project point of view, I was like, oh, man, you know, I've just started thinking about doing something and then this has come in. But I could see the opportunities within it. Yeah. And actually, it was probably for the project.
Yes.
Really helped me.
Yeah.
Do a lot of the work on it.
Yeah, yeah.
Like growing awareness, building up social network channels and being able to listen, being able to be heard from people because everyone was sat on the phone.
Yeah.
You know, you could grow a following and engage with people and talk to them. People had time to talk as well.
I think it was one of the first times, you know, that we kind of picked up on the story after the podcast was when we were digging that big hole out of Winslow. Yeah.
we were digging.
Yeah.
I was digging.
You were digging. I was watching.
He was in awe.
I was in awe of your digging ability. I dug a bit. Yeah. No. I think it was that day you shared with me the website that you created and, you know, you kind of put the projects together around it, you know, and I remember looking at that going, oh no, this guy's really serious, you know? And it wasn't like, you know, because sometimes people have ideas and they talk about ideas and those ideas sort of happen at some point. And there was the bit where I remember you showed me that and I went, oh no, this is the real deal. This is cool. This is going to happen. And, you know, through all the journey and the collaborations, I think, and the fact that you took it back to roots in that. I think you originally planned on doing things in studios and all that sort of stuff, and it didn't kind of go that way.
No.
And weirdly, I think that works.
Yeah.
I think it's added to the caliber of what's happened because you've got that creative control. You've got that, you know, the recording at home, and I'm sure you'll talk about it in a minute. But you know, you've been able to lead that and guide it, and through those social networks, connect with different and the people that have come through and played on the record and all that. And that's happened because you've made that happen. I'm always in awe of things like that, you know, particularly during a pandemic, mate. That's
Well, I kind of see it as I was lucky that it happened during them because, like I say, you could approach people and a lot of people had more time than they usually would. So when you go to them, hey, would you be up for doing this? They're like, I haven't got anything to do.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, it benefited.
Yeah.
On the recording side of it, my original plan was to obtain funding to hire a studio for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And then obtain funding where we could pay musicians to travel and to stay at the studio.
Yeah.
And hopefully cover the time if the funding was enough. But it was, so I kind of had this idea that that's how you'd do it.
Yeah.
And then when the virus kicked off, I did a live stream as part of like a, I did it on Facebook. And I did it for Mind. I think I raised like 320 quid or something.
Oh, well done, mate.
Which was wonderful.
Yeah.
But I used my MacBook, the camera on that, and then I had an old USB mixer and a Lesis 16 track, which was what, when I was in the band years ago, was what we recorded our first sort of demos.
I think
and stuff
I know
on.
Which ones you mean. Yeah,
big thing.
Yeah, with the faders on and stuff.
Yeah. It's decent. You could still use it for like a live gig and that. But when I listened back to the quality of it, I was like, oh, that's not great. And then because I'd never done streaming or anything before, and then I started looking at other people.
Yeah,
and some people was doing it, and the quality was amazing.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you started seeing some of the well-known artists doing streams from a studio.
Mm.
And you're kind of watching it like you're watching a DVD of a gig.
Yes.
And it's coming live at you.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, you know, do we need to be in a studio now to do this? But the main thing that made me think differently was when I looked at the prices for having a studio for 2 weeks with the quality of people that I wanted to work with.
Yeah.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And I couldn't have obtained funding for that level.
Yeah.
Because at the time, everyone was going for funding.
Yes.
For all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And when I looked at the... It was kind of like, from a personal point of view, I thought, could I get the songs to the level that I wanted them at or that I felt they deserved to be at if I had the constraints of time?
Mm.
And I don't think, I didn't feel I was able to do that.
Yeah.
Not just organising people to be in a place at a specific point, but I felt that if you were relying on, you're kind of relying on everyone to hit the same point at the same time and with people you've never met.
Yeah.
At a time when you don't know when you'll be allowed to do it. And then I thought the other way, looking at it, was you could do it at home and you haven't got to worry about time.
Yeah.
Because I've wrote a lot of the actual music parts, like bass lines and different parts, and I've said to people, this is how it goes.
Yeah.
I can do that at home.
Yeah.
And if I'm not feeling it, I just shut my computer down and go and watch the telly.
Yeah.
And I'm not paying for that.
Yeah.
So you remove the time constraint and the creativity just comes through because it's just natural.
Yeah. Do you find that when you're clock watching, you can't be creative?
Yeah. No, I can't. Our son now is 2 years and 4 months.
Mm.
So in our house, and our house, just for the listener's benefit, is kind of like a bungalow on stilts.
Yeah.
So it's all one level, and underneath at the front is a double garage.
Mm.
And then the top level is all with the garden. Mm. So it's like kind of built onto a slope.
Yeah.
So if my son's awake in the house, I can't record because if he's watching the telly or he's running around playing, you pick it up.
Mm.
You know, it's not as if I can go upstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get that separation. So in the good old days, and you'll understand this, when he had two sleeps, and it would be like 10:30 in the morning for an hour and a half, and then the afternoon one.
Yeah.
Which he's still kind of clinging onto, but we can see it disappearing, and we fear what the next few months are going to be like for ourselves.
Yeah.
I started trying to be like, well, I'll get a bit down in this.
Mm.
And it's just impossible.
Can't do it.
Because I'm constantly thinking, how long have I got?
Yeah.
And it's just not happening.
Mm.
And if I'm creating something with that in my subconscious, it's not the quality or the feel that you want to it. Somebody once described, I thought it was lovely, and I can't say who told it me or where I heard it. It could have just been someone I was talking to or a known person on an interview. But they described on how if you think of films and recordings as a capture moment of a said person, then they're always going to be alive in that moment.
Mm.
And I think... But whether I was imagining this or whether this was what it was about, was when they're on about Freddie Mercury and he was recording certain vocals.
Yes.
And you've actually got this snapshot of Freddie when he was like 28, 27, whatever it was.
It's immortal, isn't it?
Yeah. And you can listen to it. And that, when things like that, it changed the way I listened to music or watch a film.
Yeah.
Because I can connect with it. And I appreciate it more. Because in effect, I'm a fly on the wall in that place and that time.
Yeah.
But it also made me think about, there are some talented people that can have the child sleeping and be like, I've got to bash this out in half hour, but I'm not one of them. I need to fiddle and play and stumble across where I'm going to know that it's the right way.
Yeah.
So this is the long way of saying of why I decided to do it at home and why it's taking ages. It is. Simply because of that.
Yeah.
But what matters more to me we all put the constraints of time on us, on ourselves, for no reason.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be done here. It's got to be done there. And we like to stick to that because it's ingrained in us from school.
Yeah.
From when right from when you start your academic life, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have your term.
Yeah.
And you have to have things finished by a certain time.
And it just doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And but you're taught as well that if you don't meet X or Y, then you're wrong or bad or bad planning or something.
Yeah, if there's some failure element, yeah.
Yeah. And I understand in the workplace and there's time constraints and so on and so forth for business operations or for profit. Yeah, it depends which side they're looking at it.
Yeah.
But I get that.
Yeah.
But then in my own world, I thought, well, what am I actually... I could feel pressure in the early days because I wasn't progressing to the timeline that I'd set for myself.
Yeah.
And I could start feeling ill because I'm like, I haven't done that yet. I've got to go to work because we need money because we've got to eat.
Mm. Yeah.
When are we going to be able to do that? You know, and then my wife would be, she's been amazing. So she'd be like, right, me and Sonny will go out on Saturday. So you've got some time to do some music.
Mm.
But then I started being like, I've got to get this right today because they've made that wonderful contribution to give me time.
Yeah.
So I've got to honour that.
Yeah.
But then nothing was coming out because I was, again, putting pressure on myself for something that just doesn't exist.
Mm.
That applies in life.
Yeah.
But the project's kind of been like a mirror of me still learning about myself.
Yeah, okay.
And my own recovery still. There's been elements of it that I've been checking in with myself and realising, in a way, like identifying parts of my personality or approach to things that I can improve on.
Yes.
Or not necessarily have to improve on, but just be aware of how I can naturally default to a feeling or an emotion on something and sort of correcting myself to say, oh, you don't need to feel like that about this.
Yeah.
It's okay to say, well, actually, I'll do that next week.
It's almost they call it cognitive behavioural therapy. It's almost like creative behavioural therapy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Through exploring a project, it's actually a therapeutic action because you're figuring yourself out. There's a form of self-counselling involved in it and reflection and development. And that's amazing. Yeah.
It's been... since I was ill, my whole life's been a journey of still understanding what I could have done different before.
Yeah.
And what I need to continue doing now to not go down that path of illness.
Yeah.
And I probably... overanalyze some stuff too much now.
Yeah.
Just as a natural defense from where I've been.
Yes.
But it has been a wonderful... When the pandemic first kicked off, because from my business that I was running, making furniture outside of music, it was going really well.
Yeah.
And I'd set it up and... it was really doing well, but I'd invested a lot of money just before the 2020 into my website and to sit right in the Google world. Yeah. So I was visible.
Yeah.
So when the pandemic kicked off, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I took a gamble.
Yeah.
And now you would never have predicted, like, oh, I don't know if I'll invest this in case the world shuts down due to a virus.
Yeah.
But it did. It is still. I still.
Yeah.
I still don't think we've had time to properly process what we've been through.
No. And it's not individual trauma. This is a collective trauma that affects, you know, across this stuff's going to be epigenetic. This stuff's going to come out. You know, two or three generations down the line, we'll probably figure this thing out. Yeah.
I mean, we've literally gone. We've gone straight from. The virus, we had that sense of false security that we were through it.
Yeah.
And then we were put back into restrictions and lockdown and the worry again.
Yeah.
And then literally, well, we haven't even come out of it.
No.
News has just changed into like potential World War III.
Yeah.
And the pace is still going.
Yeah.
Restrictions are lifted. Back at work, everyone.
Yeah.
Let's make some money.
Yeah.
Let's do that stuff we've not done.
Yeah. And that, I think that's what I mean in that it's this kind of is normality now. you know, yeah. and we've, you know, we've never had to deal with anything like this, no. not for a long time. And, you know, it is, how do you actually really, that thing we're talking about, creative behavior, you know, behavioral therapy, how do you actually really properly reflect on this stuff en masse? Because you can do it as an individual, you can do it and say, this is how it affected me in my life. But actually,
yeah.
you've got to kind of zoom out a bit and look at, yeah, it affected me in that way, but it affected that person totally different. Because yep. they had a slightly different, they're a different age, they've got different, you know, I didn't have to worry about a business because I'm a teacher and I was employed. So I just like switched that online and I found that quite easy. Some people find that really, really hard, but I didn't. So I've somehow got to, through empathy, think of, so that, you know, there was a TED talk about a single story which I was looking at, and it was about the idea of your kind of, what I took from it was like your map of the world that you've created, that you've built from your environment and your upbringing and your treatment and how you see the world. Everybody's map of that world, the world is totally different.
Yeah.
So everyone's navigating a different map every day. And you know, with different expectations of how this thing works. And once you think about that, that's really hard, because you think, everyone's experience of this pandemic was very slightly different.
It's hugely different.
And you can't collectively come out with recover from that trauma, because everyone's story is a different story.
Well, we were watching the One Show, I think, on what, 7 o'clock, and the presenter, I can't remember her name, but she referred back to the lockdown on how that at that point a house was immaculate and all the drawers were sorted because she's had time to, you know, what else did she have to do?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that seem to have that sort of like, well, I was so bored, well, I had to do this.
Yeah.
And like from the flip side for us, and like we had, my wife was on maternity leave, so her wage was very low.
Mm.
My work stopped overnight and I'd invested a lot of my security into the website to generate more work, which was just stopped. We had a baby who was 4 months old.
Yeah.
And we didn't know how it would affect babies at that time.
Mm.
And I literally, because my work died overnight, I just had to think on my feet, and luckily I found work about 3 weeks into the lockdown, where I was helping one of the local companies deliver vegetables.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And fruit and veg. They were a wholesaler, and because obviously they usually sold and delivered to pubs and schools, there was no business for them, but they still had the supply chain because they were getting the food from Holland and it was still coming through.
Yeah.
So they just, like, via Facebook and word of mouth, advertised to the community around Derby and said, you can phone us up on one day and we'll deliver it the next day.
And
you can pay cash for it. So that's how I'd heard about that, and I phoned up and I said, you must need some drivers. He was like, yeah. And I've got a van. He was like, well, come tomorrow. So I did that for a few weeks. And until I knew I could start working outside when the government announced that you could kind of go back to work if you were doing X, Y, or Z.
Mm.
But that was it was proper, what are we going to do to survive here?
Mm.
And I'm not playing the world's smallest violin, I'm just describing that was our experience.
Yeah.
And there were people that had far worse. I mean, people lost people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
You know, there was people in the care homes that couldn't see the family, and families that never got to see relatives that contracted it and passed. You never had you know, it was awful.
Mm.
But that's when you mix it up as well. I had friends who were like, I'm so bored.
Yeah.
I'm on furlough.
Yeah.
And I'm only getting 80%. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
And you're bored.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
But yeah, everyone's lockdown.
There was that thing
different.
Very early on, wasn't there, where the you know, there was celebrities crying and everyone's, and actually that idea of celebrity suddenly overnight became very like, yeah, whatever, you know, very cynical towards celebrity, whereas they were celebrated before that, and you just think, that's interesting, you know. Yeah, fascinating. What a journey that conversation took. Just trying to think.
This would happen. But I think I was on about why I decided to record at home.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're off.
And basically, it's been... The reason why it's delayed is because we had the lockdown and I had to go and, like, serve the community of Derby and Burton vegetables and fruit so we could afford to eat. So let me off that it's not coming out when it should have.
But I think through that process, it's actually enriched the project because, as you say, you've had the time to be creative, you've had the time to do those sort of things. And really, I want to just have a bit of time talking about the people that have suddenly come out of the woodwork and got involved in it, you know, and explore those guys a little bit and how they connected in and how that sort of worked.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. And there's a point where I'm going to gush about your guitar work, which I'll do in a bit as well. And your singing, of course, but particularly your guitar work.
I couldn't have done that on a constraints of time in the studio because there's been a lot of whittling and twiddling and then listening back for like a day or two. Anyway, people who are involved in the project. Well, I suppose, you know, the bit when I'd started mentioning about the project, like we discussed, I set up a website. I started growing social media channels because although I'm not a fan of social media, I understand its importance. And as long as you can try, and it's not easy, but try and instill some self-discipline with it, it can be a positive tool.
Yeah.
It really can
be.
It's
about your relationship with it, really, isn't it? Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard because I still, and my wife will say this, she's there like, you've been on your phone for an hour, and I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm guilty of it. And especially if I go down the YouTube rabbit hole.
I'm gone. Very easily like, done.
I'll think like, oh, I'm going to watch Alan Shearer's best 5 goals for England.
Yeah.
And then I'll go and do some work.
Yeah.
Famous
last words.
Yeah, an hour later, I'm like watching a 10-minute documentary of like why Pelé was the best footballer ever. And I'm like, I started growing them, but I knew that for the project to become real, I needed some money, basically. Mm. And I was willing to put some money in myself, and I have done. And that was never a problem. But I knew I needed some help.
Mm.
And I kind of, before the virus, always thought that I would have time to maybe approach local businesses or... I don't know. I was still thinking how I'd do it. But then when the virus kicked off, people had got more open.
Yeah.
To listening to people's ideas.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's because they had more time, but also we had this event happen that did open a lot of people's minds and their ears. And I looked at, Sir Captain Tom Moore with his fundraising.
Mm.
It was just so inspirational. And I kind of thought, would I feel bad doing a crowdfunder during this? Because, but then I thought, well, no, because if people can afford it and buy into it, they'll donate.
Yeah.
And if they can't, they won't.
Yeah.
And it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
So I set up the crowdfunder and I was terrified doing that because I remember speaking to my wife and I said, if this doesn't work, then the whole lot's done.
Mm.
Because if you try then to build a project that never had the support of people.
Yeah.
No one's going to buy into it. So we set the crowdfunder up and I had little, what did I call them? Like a pledge reward levels for people, depending on what they donated, would get a t-shirt or badges or you know, hats and everything. And, I'd got some quotes off some producers, and the one I wanted to work with was Miles K. Harris, at Under the Apple Tree, because he does a lot of work in the folk Americana country world. So I always find it doesn't have to be, but it's helpful if the producer you're working with has got some idea of the genre, and the records that are out there and how they work. He doesn't have to. I mean, Rick Rubin can do anything, and I wouldn't get a Rick like, well, Rick, you've not really done this, mate. But, you know, it was helpful. But as soon as I spoke to him, I knew I wanted to work with him because he's a great person. And the most important thing for me was that everyone involved was a good person. I didn't want to have to deal with people who I didn't feel were positive and good humans, really. So I set the crowdfund up to raise $1,500. That was kind of to cover what Miles's fee would be for producing the album, on the basis that I was recording most of it at home and we'd probably have a day or two in the studio. And we hit that in like 3 or 4 days.
Amazing.
Which I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
And I think it was within 10 days we'd got over 2,200. Which is extra money, so it's it allowed me to put money into like the promotion for the first two singles and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Which has just been incredible. But doing that, getting that crowdfunder and it working and working so quick, I think that it turned my idea into a project that I knew people were buying into.
Yeah.
And wanted to support. And it also made me realise that people they must have connected with the music that I'd dribbled out in just streams or on the odd little acoustic snapshot on my socials. People they must have thought it was good enough to invest in it and to want to get it out there. And that was just an incredible, for me, it then, well, we're going through this pandemic and I've got responsibilities at home and my worries of family and friends and what's going on. It gave me a focus.
Yeah.
Of like a line of escape from the worry of thinking like, right, people are back in this. So I've now got a responsibility to deliver this, not just from an idea, but for us. We've got a crowd of like, I think there's 80 funders who've all put money in to say, I believe in you.
Yeah.
And when you get that, it lifts you. So it was just incredible. And, and I think whatever you're doing, you've got to keep the focus on what the end goal is. You always have to see that, but you don't have to be setting a path that what is getting there.
Yeah.
And I kind of, I've flirted with this idea before, but I've learned that every little victory, you should celebrate and enjoy it and then think, well, now this has happened. Where can I use this now to go?
Yeah.
And it might take you on a totally different journey to where you originally envisaged.
Yeah.
But if it's taking you to where that goal is, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
As long as it's still, my rule I've always tried to be, as long as I'm still enjoying it and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's doing what we wanted to do, which is get the music out of there to generate awareness of mental health in general, my story from the point of view that you can be very ill and come back and not just come back to a level that, I can just about knock around in society now.
Yeah.
Because that's what some people assume that all you're entitled to do.
Yes.
But you can get back and do something.
Yeah.
You can do whatever you want. It's just, we can do it.
Yeah.
And that, if people have been through mental illness and can't achieve stuff, I don't mean at all that they're failing or not achieving anything. Yeah. Your victory after mental illness, to be honest with you, is still being here.
Yeah.
And then after that, everything's a win.
Yeah.
My point is with it really that if you want to and you feel that you can strive for it, don't let anybody allow you to feel you can't because you've had mental illness.
Yeah. No, that's a great message. That's a really great message. So you've had, you've sort of connected with the producer, you've got that worked out, you've got the funding, the songs are written, you know how you're recording it. At this point, I'll gush about your guitar work because... I don't know. There was something when I heard you, and I've seen you play a couple of times, and I've heard you playing all of that. And then you know, I always thought, yeah, that guy can play, that guy can sing, that's amazing, great songs, you know, really almost like a Cat Stevens type storyteller, a vocal, you know, line around things. I don't know if that's a compliment or not, but that,
yeah, no, yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I love Cat Stevens.
So like that's what I really buzzed off, and then I heard the playing of your guitar on the record and went, oh no, no, this guy knows what he's doing. that's like dead. It's not just good guitar work, it's really tasteful. Really tasteful.
Dude, you're an amazing musician. So you saying that is really lovely.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No, thank you for accepting the compliment, because I know they're hard sometimes. Wonderful. But there was that thing of hearing the emotion that you have in your vocal and the way that you tell stories through your songs, but also the way that you use your guitar to communicate. And that's something that I think is really special about your work.
Because
it's not just the vocal and the storytelling, it's the whole communication of music. And I think that's a really, I don't know, there's not many people that can do that, mate. And I think that's really, really something. And also through listening to your record, it's also that you've gathered other people on the journey that might be friends or other people that seem to have that same ability to communicate through music. And I just wanted to unpick that a little bit and see, you know, sort of how did you manage to communicate what you wanted to achieve and how did they sort of come through with it?
Well, and it's important that we say that some of the people you have contributed and will be contributing a bit more to it.
Yeah.
And I've played music for years, but I think over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years, I started to become a student to music. And I've got to thank Spotify, unfortunately, because when I started using that, and there was like this Discover Weekly feature where I'm getting new music and it bases it on what I've been listening to. And then I could easily grab playlists, and I'd never listened to music like this in this way before. So I would always be a CD guy or a tape, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I was hearing stuff and artists that I've never heard before.
Yeah.
And still am on a weekly basis. All sorts of different types of music from different cultures, from all areas of the globe. And like, especially listening to stuff through headphones, which I love doing, really analysing production and how it is. And I started to think, why am I liking that? Why? Sometimes you hear a song, yeah, that's a nice song. But then other times, your heart.
I know exactly what you mean. Something else. It connects to a deeper level. Yeah.
You get butterflies and it literally turns your soul and it joins it. And I've thought, well, if I'm gonna come back to music and create something, and if these songs are going to be born out of such a dark, nasty place, but also a wonderful place of hope and excitement of getting better, they can't just be. It would be pointless doing the project if they're just like, yeah, that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get that and get it into the recording.
Mm.
And again, if I had the time constraints of a studio, and I could have had the most amazing musicians in the world, but you wouldn't have had that attachment to it.
Yeah.
Because when I'm recording my vocals or my guitar, I'm on my own.
Mm.
I don't have anyone touching the buttons, through the window, dropping it. Oh, I'll try that bit again. Same with my vocals. I am on my own because I don't want anyone else around.
Mm.
In the future, I might work differently. But for this, I want it in my time. And it allows me to just go to those places and access them, which can be dangerous. I mean, Captain of the Seas is a really... I've got a bit more used to it now because I've heard it a lot more. Yeah. Where it was one of the hardest songs I'd ever performed.
Yeah.
And I knew I had to go back to that place when I was doing the vocal and the guitar to capture.
I'm getting shivers.
That, sorry.
Oh, no, it's beautiful. Yeah.
But I was to get back to that place, I have to remind myself of how I was feeling when I was having suicidal thoughts and when I didn't want to be on the world no more and when I didn't know what I was going to do with myself because the career I had just disappeared and I was just felt totally lost and useless. And I had to go back into that mindset and it's exhausting doing it. But it got the vocals out and then you have to try and get yourself out of it.
It's an intense listen, that is.
Yeah.
It is. I mean, you know, well, I can't imagine what it was, you know, with delivering it and where you were at the time, but you can hear it. You can hear. Now you're going through something on this. You know, it's love. It's beautiful and can't think of the right word. Not sorrowful. That's the wrong word. But it's very intense.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that I think that's been probably one of the most used words.
Mm.
There was a guy who reviewed it and he said he thought it was amazing and blah blah blah. He says, but the chorus was too intense for him.
Mm.
And I just sent him a message and I was like, it's meant to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like the guy is fighting his illness and he doesn't make it.
Mm.
So you're not meant to feel comfortable for
that. Yeah, 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 yeah. And that's art. That's art. People have to understand that.
Yeah.
You don't create music for entertainment.
No.
You don't. Some people might.
No, then I'm
that's
not
fine. That's fine. If people like that, that's fine. If that's what they want to do. But for me, and obviously for yourself, the way that I want to create music is because it's art. And if I want something to rip someone's ears out, I'm going to make it sound like that. Yeah. I'm not going to sanitize it.
Exactly.
You know, to make it enjoyable to listen to, because that's not what I want to do.
One of the biggest problems with mental health always has been and still is, even though we've come a long way, I feel, to be honest, we're regressing a bit with our attitude towards it because the world's moving and we're already... New normal, come on, let's just pull up our pants and get on with it. And the easiest thing to do is for us to go, oh, and I'll use the word intense as this person described it, that's too intense for me. I'll just withdraw.
Mm.
That's not for me.
It's too hard.
Yeah, and we have to protect ourselves. I'm not knocking anyone because with the stuff on the telly about Ukraine.
That's a good point.
I want to know what's going on, so I'll have a snapshot every day and then I don't look at the news and I don't Google it because I find it so sad and upsetting that we've been through one of the most challenging times with the virus where so many people reflected and thought we need to do better on so many levels for us to come out of that.
And then
we've gone into that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I understand the reasons why people don't get involved and I don't have a for or against on any of it.
Mm.
I just don't want it to happen.
Mm.
And it just saddens me when I'm watching images of kids the same age as my son who are relying on food and warm clothes being sent over and they're fleeing their homes.
Mm.
But yeah, I'm talking about it and it saddens me. So I have to protect myself.
Yeah.
And, I understand that other people are like that, but my point was some people take it as an easy option.
Yeah.
And that when that person heard it, it was like, it was just a bit too intense for me. I did think, and this is nothing against said person, but how many times have people seen a scenario or situation that they could have gone, hey, are you okay?
Mm.
And it could have literally helped someone so much.
Yeah.
But they decided to not do that.
Mm.
And I just wish we would all be a bit more... Well, the first single, Ain't No Place to Hide, was kind of... The message was about trying for us to take responsibility a bit more as a collective.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take any effort, really, to... If you walk past someone and they look like they're struggling, just say, hey, you okay?
Mm.
But we don't do it, you know? And I can see us going back that way.
Yeah.
A little.
A bit, you know, mind your own business type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I digress.
Yeah. No, that's what this is for. That's beautiful. Yeah.
But yeah, so getting people... Sorry. Yeah, so when I was on about how I want to capture the emotion, and this was the beauty of the lockdown, was there were so many people putting videos up or streaming or whatever online.
Yeah.
I just had a whole world open up to me of artists.
Yeah.
People that I would never have known existed. Mm. And I did a few live streams where there was like, you know, songwriter sessions and there'd be like 50 people on them. And I'd just be going through Instagram and looking at the hashtags like folk music UK, country music, blues, whatever, and looking at different singers and, and that. And basically, if someone, if I felt the same emotional response from them that I felt from other stuff,
yeah,
or from listening back to the recordings or the demos of the stuff I'd wrote, then I'd know that they were someone I'd probably want to look at approaching.
Yeah.
And that's how I'd do it.
And that takes guts to make that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, literally everyone said yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Apart from a couple, which again, I messaged them all and I say, there's no pressure. I like how you do this, but you've got your own life. You might not like it. That's fine. Cause not everyone likes stuff. Simple. Yeah, so I just, if I connected with people and what they did, that was one thing. But then I'd think that it was about complimenting what I can do. I know my strengths and I know my not-so-strengths. They're not using weaknesses. So,
yeah.
You know, it was about looking at people that could plug those gaps and just asking them. There's just nothing else to it. Yeah.
But that's good. It's that people were up for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really cool, you know. The one that was the piano player.
Yeah, Anna Corcoran.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's amazing. She played on Laura Marling's Songs of Our Daughters album. Plays for Robert Vincent, but plays her own stuff as well in her own right. I mean, she's a wonderful singer. She's got a great voice as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's a brilliant player. But when I heard her piano playing on Robert Vincent's album, I was just like, wow. Because she can play. Anna will be able to play anything she wants, anything. But what I love about her playing and a lot of people that I work with, I've never been a fan of like overcooking the pudding.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, I'm always more of I like the melody and the feel behind it as opposed to the technical ability, if that makes sense.
There's a great line that Paddy used when we're talking about writing the low stuff, and he says, just serve the song.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
But Anna served the songs that she does with Robert. It's wonderful because it's not a constant playing.
Yeah,
you hear it come in. So there's the action that she plays with, she's going, but it's so gentle. You have to really hear it. But then, you know, if a guitar dips down, and she'll come in with a filling.
Yeah,
she's wonderful. When she said that she would be part of the project, I come off the phone to her, and I said to like Katie, my wife, I was like, I can't believe this.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's very strange, because a lot of these people I've still not met.
Yeah.
I've got Anna, the string player, Robin Coob is her name. She plays under the name Run Remedy.
Right.
Now, again, Robin is, like, amazing on the violin, but she also does her own stuff, and her songs are incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
And her voice is just... it's amazing.
Yeah.
Robin, do you know what? She sent me a message.
Oh, really? Right.
And I watched her on Instagram. I was like, wow, this lady can play. And so I followed her.
Mm.
And then she sent me a message. And it was like really cheeky, like, hey, you want some strings? Right? And I was like, yeah. And we arranged
that's the dream.
Yeah.
You've achieved the dream.
Yeah. And then we had a Zoom, and I was sat in my van, and had her on the phone, and we had a chat, and I knew then I wanted to work with her, and she's a lovely person.
Mm.
Then I went up to Manchester, that's where she's from, just for a jam. I'd play her a couple of the songs and then she would see what she wanted. And again, I said, if you decide that it's not for you, that's fine. Mm. Just having the jam doesn't mean that you've got to do anything.
Yeah.
But she was really keen and she did Captain of the Seas, which I still listen to now, and the strings on there, I'm like, this is on one of my songs.
Yeah.
Like,
it's epic, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's so epic.
Well, when I went up there, we did about five takes. And when I say takes, it was not five goes at getting something right.
Yeah.
It was five completely different lines of melody that she just had in her head.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All that I said to Robin, I had the riff, I played it on the guitar and she knew that. But all the variations of that...
She just took it.
She did it. And then she literally, she'd say, right, start recording, being song finished, right, last one, put that, here's another one. And then she'd go, right, you got about five or six there, pick what you want out of them, put them together, give them to your producer, whatever. And she did it in... hour and 20 minutes.
Right. And, that's serious.
Mm,
yeah.
She's real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, but there's people, I'm saying about how amazing these people are. Mm. You have come on there. Your vocals on Ain't No Place to Hide made that chorus just incredible.
That's very kind. Thank you.
No, it's beautiful. I remember when I first, well, heard you sing, I hadn't seen you sing. It was when we'd come down to that showcase.
Yeah.
And me and Katie had come out of the car and we had Sonny, his little, I think he had, what did he have? Oh, he had this little like stripy all-in-one thing.
Yeah.
That, like, so his little hands and feet like that. I remember that. I love that. It broke my heart when he grew out of that. But we were taking him in and we were outside and you was playing, oh, God, I can't remember. You was covering a song and I heard it outside and both me and Katie, as we got closer, looked and was like, whoa, this guy's got a voice, man, because it was amazing. Mm. I wish I could remember what that song was. But, you know, we came in and seen the rest of the set. I mean, you've got an amazing voice and your guitar playing is really, really, really good, man. I don't think you... For Christmas, I'll get you a trumpet so you can start playing it. But it's but again, it was about, it wasn't just, oh, well, this guy can sing, let's get him on. Mm. The stuff that you do with Circularity and the way you are as a person and the stuff you do for the community, it's like, it's my honour to have you as part of it, not the other way around. It's special for me to have that.
Thank you.
You know, and there's various... The lad on the drums is someone I've known for years. he's called Tom Jones, right? But his nickname is T-Bird.
Yeah.
T-Bird Jones. And he plays drums in a band called Swamp Meat.
Mm.
Swamp Meat Family Band, sorry. And they're signed to a label in Sweden. I mean... one of their last gigs, they opened Jack White's new record store in London.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So they were invited by Jack.
Yeah.
You know, and then he's in my lounge playing drums because we did the drums in the lounge.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, we did them we to cut down costs and travel.
Yeah.
We've done the drums. So he's done them a bit at a time.
Yeah.
So I've used two mics on the kick drum. We did the kick drum.
Yeah.
And then the hats and the snare.
Yeah.
And it's
you'd be surprised how many records have done that.
Well,
and done it in that way.
It takes some playing that does.
Yeah.
Because
you've got to imagine you're doing the other bits, and so it sounds like.
So
real.
It's like we disable his hats so we can still get the feet bouncing.
Mm.
But I honestly think that it's not something everyone can do.
Yeah.
And he's amazingly talented, but he's been a great friend of mine for a long time. So I'm just so lucky to have these people. I've got
isn't technology brilliant that don't need a studio,
but
you can do that.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And it sounds good. I'm not, you know, it's not like, oh, I've recorded that at home, or does it sound like a DIY? It doesn't sound DIY.
Yeah. Oh no. I think that the I knew to make sure that it didn't sound DIY. That was where my own investment went in on the gear,
getting the right gear. Yeah,
and the interface. You know, you can get interfaces for £100-200 that are great, but I knew I had to go to the next level.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the same with the microphone.
Yep.
But they're stuff that will work for a long time.
Yeah.
Even if they don't, you know what? If they self-destructed once that last bit's recorded, I'd be like, okay, you've done your job.
Yeah.
We've got there's so many people. I think when the record's finished, be something like 28 artists
amazing
would have played on the record.
So this is what I'm getting from this, is that there's not many people that can do that, that can go on a journey of creating an album, get it crowdfunded because people believe in the record, and then get 28 people to also perform in it because they believe in the record as well. That's huge. That's an incredible achievement, mate. That really is. You know,
I don't think of it like that. But when you say it now, I have a sense of pride and smugness. No, it's when you'll know when your head is in a project and you've got that end game.
That's it. That's all that matters.
You're there, and things happen. And I have to keep saying to myself, like, when I have a victory and something great happens, but then if something that I really wanted to doesn't, I'm stewing over that.
Yeah.
And I have to say to myself, it's like getting
10 compliments and one criticism, and that criticism smashes your world a bit.
Yeah. And I'm like, I've got to leave this behind.
Yeah.
And I'm focused on that. And I'm getting better at that.
Yeah.
But I'm no expert. I'm literally using the projects as my own life learning.
Well, that's what they all are, isn't it? Really, I think that's definitely. So, I suppose to finish with, you know, how close are you to the completion of the projects, and what's it kind of going to look like when it's done?
Okay. Originally, the third single should have come out, mid to end February.
Yeah.
But as you know, and we've spoke about, my mum passed away end of January. So
I thought you could say you're still waiting for me to sing on it. I'm sorry.
No, it's not all about you, mate. Yeah, but I'm still waiting for. I just put it on the shelf.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and waited till I was. I wouldn't even say waited till I was in the right frame of mind, because I've still done so much stuff on the project after mum's passed.
Yeah.
And I've found it brilliant for me to have something to focus on and some positivity of trying to make stuff happen.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm dealing with the emotions of that. But we got the artwork done. We're going to set the date. So there's. I reckon the single will come out maybe in 5-6 weeks.
Yeah,
the third one. And then the album, there's four songs left to finish off. But we're not miles away from that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm hoping that... Well, the album's going to be this summer, 100%.
Brilliant.
What's more important to me is making sure that we don't lose any of the quality of the album, and that I give myself more than enough time to do the promotion work and the PR work, because with how far we've got and how well we've done, it's like I was on about, it's those stepping stones.
Yes.
So now I've got some stepping stones that mean, instead of looking at the level that I could have been at the start, we can actually maybe reach a higher little level here or there.
Brilliant.
More awareness, more people listening to it and raising more money.
Yeah.
And, so if that means delaying the release to end of August instead of mid-July, for example, then we'll do what's right for the project, not for getting it finished.
Nice, yeah.
But the album will be released digitally, but also physically.
Yep.
In the form of CDs.
Mm-hmm.
And every crowdfunder that donated their name will be in the sleeve.
Brilliant.
Which is lovely. And we will be releasing a vinyl of the album, but that will be later.
Right.
So it might be the end of the year or it might be the start of next year.
Yeah.
Because...
So, because the wait list for vinyl at the minute.
Yeah, the waiting list, but also I can only be honest, it's the financial...
Oh, they're huge. It could be very expensive.
It's a big outgoing.
Yeah.
And I've booked like my first national tour, which is in... well, it actually starts in April, but I can't announce the April gig.
Yeah.
It's a secret gig. Which I'll tell you about after. Well, I'm not telling him, but I will. But yeah, we've got dates in May, June, and then I think July.
Brilliant.
So, originally that was when the album should come out, so the tour was that. But when with Mum passing, I thought, oh, it's took so long to arrange a tour on myself. I did not want to go down the route of trying to rearrange all those dates.
Yeah.
So I'll just leave them and have them as a... Yeah. Pre-album dinger, you know.
Just got to do another one in a bit.
Exactly. but yeah, so that's what it'll be. Mm. Well, I actually had the first revenue from the first two singles.
Mm.
So I'm going to be making my first donation to Calm next week.
Yes.
And it's not loads, but considering it's just from downloads and streams, it's £123.
That's great.
From two singles.
Yeah.
So like... And bear in mind, listeners, that one of those was number one on the Amazon Hot New Release Folk Chart.
Yeah.
When people see that and think I'll be driving in a Bentley, I won't be.
Yeah.
Because that's how much money you actually make from it.
Yeah.
But to have that first donation ready to go, that the idea started, we funded it, we got the song out there. And now it's been listened to and purchased and then streamed. And then eventually when all those companies have took all of the money, basically, that little bit that's left over that comes through, we can go, well, that goes to you.
Yeah.
I think Calm basically average it out that each phone call costs about £8.
Yeah.
So that's, what, 15 people?
Yeah.
That,
great.
That's a
great
fund way to help.
Yeah,
that's,
brilliant.
That's just amazing.
Yeah.
But that's the first 15 of many, hopefully.
Yeah.
We'll make more money to be able to donate from the album because it's physical.
Yes.
You know yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, the single was 79p on iTunes.
Yeah.
And that, and I don't see 79p.
Yeah.
You know, so 120 might not sound a lot, but I'm really like pleased with that.
I think that's the first one. That's good. It's the first of many, hopefully.
Yeah. Well, the idea always was because it will always be, this record will always be donated.
Yeah.
So if my career continues going well, we'll still be donating that money in 5-10 years' time.
Brilliant, mate.
Which is just, it's just wicked. And that's what I wanted it to do.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's great. That's great. Well, we'll do another one. We'll catch up again a bit further down the line. Website craiggordmusic.com, is that right?
That's it, yeah.
So get on that, explore that, figure that one out, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, thank you for listening.